God is a good father, and like he like loves it when his children dream and go for things. I think the process that he was bringing me through was that it was good to dream, but he wanted to replace my dreams with his dreams.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who've experienced the life-changing love of Jesus. Stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives. Welcome to the Stories of His Glory podcast. I'm Ryan Jungling, Area Director with FCA in Bismarck, North Dakota. And today, I'm excited to introduce you to Elise C.A. Elise is a physician's assistant in Grand Forks, a former college basketball player at UND, and an active volunteer with FCA in northeastern North Dakota. Listen in as Elise shares her experience playing college hoops, how the uncertainty of her next steps out of college led her literally on a trip around the world, and how her walk with Jesus has grown throughout her life. Here's my conversation with Elise C.A. Elise, thanks so much for joining me today.
It's wonderful to be here.
I'm super excited about this. I think back, our paths crossed in college a little bit at UND. You know, actually, most of our college paths crossed over there. You're part of the women's basketball team. You were probably playing when the Betty was relatively new.
Stories of His Glory podcast is grateful to Copper Dog Waffles and Coffee for their support of FCA and youth athletics. Copper Dog is located on historic Main Street in Mandan and has the best gourmet waffles and custom coffee drinks. When you go, try my favorite, the Rookie, and definitely try pairing it with one of their amazing coffees. Stop in today for a unique experience, something unlike anything else you'll see in North Dakota. Sweet or savory, there's something for everyone at Copper Dog in Mandan.
And I know my wife is from Grand Forks. I make it up to Grand Forks quite a bit, and campus does not look the same now as it did 15 years ago, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Basketball has been a big part of your life. As a podcast that talks to athletes, coaches, me as a former athlete, which is a different way to look at it. Maybe I look with rose-colored glasses as I look back, but take us back to younger Elise, and what was it about sports that drew you in? What was it about basketball that was attractive? Let's start there.
Yeah, great question. I think one of the things that kind of brought me to where I got to in sports was definitely having two younger brothers. So I have two twin brothers, and we're pretty close in age, and we all just kind of like sports. And we spent a lot of our free time just like playing, you know, in the yard. So we were all very competitive, and that definitely got developed early, just informally through play. So much fun. We just had so much fun. So I always just really liked playing sports, and probably kind of what funneled me towards basketball was just the opportunities that were given to me when I was younger. There were some really good quality basketball camps. Got to credit Billy Dixon. She's been a coach in the area, and she spent a lot of her summer just coaching kids, giving kids who didn't have maybe a lot of money a chance to go to a really quality basketball camp. So I love sports, and then just actually received some pretty good coaching, got the fundamentals down when I was younger. And so alongside of that, I grew up watching the UND women win national championships, and kind of cool, like Providence, I guess, is some crew staff lived across the street from us. And so they would have the women's basketball players over who were interested in being discipled and everything. So kind of got a little bit of it in with them. And so when you get to know some players personally and they're doing really well, you got to go to all the games. And so I definitely dreamed about wearing that uniform when I was younger. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And that would have been Hislop, right?
Yep. So I was at that 97, national championship at the Hislop. That was awesome.
That's so awesome. Yeah. And how cool that was right in your hometown. Like you said, crew staff living across the street and the impact that has. What a cool picture as to what it could look like to do discipleship. And we'll get to that. But it's really cool how your story mirrors that a little bit.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. So you're a Central grad. Right.
Correct.
And don't want to get that wrong. I student taught at Central. So my wife is from the other school, but I got a special place in my heart for Central. It's a really, really cool place. And yeah, like as you started to grow and as you started to develop as an athlete, when was it maybe that, you know, because we can dream that we're going to play college basketball or play college sports or be a professional, whatever. We can dream that. But then oftentimes that like age 12 to 13 kids are like, yeah, maybe not. Like, so when was it that maybe you first felt like, I'm kind of good at this?
Yeah, good question. So I was fortunate to have Jean Royce move into town. She was my coach in high school, and she had coached at Morehead State and had come to coach at Central. And so she was actually coaching seventh grade basketball just to kind of get to know the girls that were coming up through the ranks. And that was my seventh grade year. It was the first year she was here. And so we have the varsity coach coaching us little seventh graders. And I remember she was putting us through drills and she was like, yeah, hey, if you can do this layup drill and get this many, like supposedly you're supposed to be able to play in college. And I was like, challenge accepted, you know, like, let's go. And so I was able to do it. And she's like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. You know, so it was like this, like, you know, you haven't arrived, obviously, when you've done that, but that definitely gave me confidence. Like, okay, like, it doesn't guarantee anything, but it's something to shoot for. Like, I guess maybe I'm in the ballpark for that.
Yeah. Wow. She was the varsity coach. She had been coaching in college.
Yeah.
Was the varsity coach at Central. And then she also coached the seventh grade. Obviously, the season worked itself out for that. But how cool. How cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. So as you, like, I know a little bit about that time, a little bit, you know, where I'd see Central, just very little. But as you went on in your high school career then, and you started, like, what did that look like as you started to get to that point? Because as a seventh grader, you're like, well, maybe I can be a college athlete. Maybe I can play college basketball because this drill was supposed to determine that. And as you started to get those, like, oh, well, now I have to start making decisions and, you know, you're maybe going to more camps potentially. And what does that start to look like through your high school years in basketball?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's interesting to reflect back because there's kind of like two different things that were happening at the same time. So like I said, I just loved playing. I think it came fairly naturally, but I did like put in some hard work, you know, just learning the fundamentals and everything. But I just really enjoyed it. And so kind of when I like was able to relax and just enjoy and play, I did really well. Not like I obviously did it perfectly, but was just was fairly successful and people noticed. And so Coach Royce noticed. And so I was asked to play in high school or on the high school team as an eighth grader. So I ended up playing on the sophomore team. But like kind of at the same time, like I started to like realize like, oh, like people are paying attention. Like, what if I make a mistake? Like, what if I miss the big shot? Like, what if I fail at these things I'm supposed to succeed at now that people are sort of watching? And so like I would have like, there's just like this terror inside of me sometimes. So I was just like, I was pretty small in middle school and was playing on the sophomore team and kind of got comfortable with that. But when they asked me to sit on the JV bench, it was just like, oh, I was just terrified. I was like hiding at the end of the bench. Like I didn't want the coach to look at me. Like, and they're trying to develop me and like put me in situations. And I got this like conflict of like, when I relax, I'm good. When I'm performing and trying not to fail, I just like kind of buckle with terror. Yeah. Kind of that, there's that going on kind of a lot of high school, I would say. Obviously grew out of that once I started playing varsity, but like that, there was always that tension inside of me.
Yeah. And so I would imagine, like you said, at the sophomore level, you got like, okay with it. And then JV level, it's like, oh, like it comes back. And then probably early in your varsity career, it rears itself up again and then it comes back. And I'm sure that that's also what happened as you step up a level. It's, you know, like, I like what you said, when people started to notice, you know, when you were in your last couple of years of high school, like people noticed and you had quite a bit of success and you were pretty good and get recruited. And that's super, super cool. And we'll get to that a little bit. Let's actually like take the other side of the equation. As you were growing up, what was your faith experience like?
Stories of His Glory is brought to you by North Dakota Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where our mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. Across North Dakota, FCA is on the ground in weight rooms, huddles, and classrooms, building up bold leaders of faith through sports and scripture. Whether it's a student athlete discovering Jesus for the first time, or a coach finding strength in community, lives are being changed every season at FCA. Want to be a part of the movement? Visit fcand.org to get involved or support the mission. Now, let's get back to the story.
Yeah, I feel just really grateful when I think back on my family. My parents are wonderful people and just really feel like they raised me and my brothers with a lot of wisdom, just like a lot of kindness and love, and really invited us into like a deeper knowledge of God, but never really pushed us. And so kind of very early on, I was very intrigued by like, who is this God that like my parents say that they believe in? And kind of, I guess in my childhood reasoning was like, if God loves me like my parents love me, then he seems like he'd be a pretty good guy. So I think I choose this God that my parents say that they believe in. And so kind of accepted like the reality of God. And it was at the same time, you know, I think in a good way, trying to make my parents proud of me. And I actually was trying to read these books that my dad was reading because I saw him reading these books. And I was like, oh, I want to be like my dad. And so I read Lord of the Rings very young, and not like I understood all of it, but just had this really deep longing to like know what was true. Like sometimes I felt like there was so much more to this world than I could see or understand. And just was like always really curious about that. And so, you know, my parents just kind of let me grow as I matured and was able to ask them questions and went to church and went to youth group. And eventually kind of in high school was just like, you know, I understand that to be a Christian is like a kind of a personal decision and something that is up to me. So I chose to be baptized, went through that process and I guess started reading the Bible and kind of just trying to figure out like, what does it meant? What does it mean to follow God? And it's sort of ironic. I do remember having this prayer time with God, and it's funny to think about, but in one ways it was very serious and God, I know God like really heard it, but I told him, well, God, like, I feel like I make a lot of mistakes. I feel like I sin a lot. And if you can make me perfect, then I'm in. So there's this kind of like immature reality of I wanted him to like make me perfect so that, you know, I didn't have that sense of failure and feeling of making mistakes and everything. But obviously in a very real way, like he does intend to like mature us through life and to, you know, reach perfection in Christ. So he kind of, it's interesting way to start though.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, kind of maybe the immaturity of the prayer, like not understanding, like it's not about the me being perfect now, but we like get Christ's perfection. And how cool that prayer was not off. The heart might have been thinking different things, right? But Jesus has been known to be misunderstood. And so that's really good. So you, obviously you grew up in this family that models it. You get this opportunity. Sounds like you had plenty of opportunities to go to youth group and you had the crew leaders living across from you. So you had this really a fairly broad perspective on, none of that sounded like church only on Sunday and nothing. It is, you're seeing a wider spectrum of that. And then when you end up going to college, right, there's like this, it's a point in time where, you know, our own actions kind of fall more in our lap. And like you had said earlier, where you think we're so like old when we get into college and then we look back and we're like, no, we don't know much. So let's kind of maybe partner that now with your faith walk in UND and how like you have this dream to play basketball for the Sioux at the time. And you, I would assume, got recruited to be at UND. Were you getting other, were you talking to other coaches, people wanting you?
Yeah, a little bit. So I actually kind of missed the AAU wave of, so
yep.
Yeah, I played in a couple tournaments as an upperclassman, but didn't really do that. So I guess maybe didn't get exposure, I guess. I'm not sure. I did get some stuff from NDSU. And I think by the time I played in AAU, I'd already committed to UND. And so kind of just, it's like, why not? Like, this is my home.
Yeah. How was that? Obviously, it's fun. Like you had all these dreams of like, I want to do that one day. How is that to go, you know, just a couple miles from your home, get to play for your dream school?
Yeah, it was. I mean, in many ways, it was really a dream come true. Like I got to have my family at the games and just got to see a lot of, yeah, people in the community that I had grown up with. In some ways that like, maybe put more pressure on me. I hadn't really anticipated that, I don't know why, but just, you know, being someone that a lot of people knew, I put more pressure on myself, you know, not, I knew the faces in the crowd and everything. I mean, starting in college was no joke, right? Like to jump from high school to college, like the first conditioning, the first weightlifting, the first practice, you're like, what am I doing? And like, am I gonna like make it after a week? You're like, I don't know if I can do this. So it's a little bit of a rude awakening. I had a rude awakening. Yeah, like if this is what it means to play in college, I don't know if I can do this. So I definitely had that for sure.
Yeah, I remember Coach Bockel was the strength coach. He wasn't the lead strength coach my first year. And so he was assigned to the baseball team. And we did a freshman only lift, but it was only like form. So we only used the bar. And I got done with that and I could not walk up the dorm steps.
And yeah, I couldn't step off the curb.
This is going to be nuts. It got better, of course, but it's quite a difference. It's quite a difference. And so you're going to school, going to UND. What a outside of basketball, and what was like your hope and dream, or was it really basketball focused? Did you know what you wanted to go into and those kinds of things, or was it really basketball first and figure the rest out later?
Yeah, I think it was probably basketball first, only because I just had this kind of itch inside of me to say, like, how far can I go with sports? How far can I go with basketball? And so I kind of wanted to just see, you know, if I put a lot of time in, if I try to develop my skills, how good can I be? And so, I mean, I took school very seriously. I definitely wanted education, absolutely. But it was basketball for sure.
Yeah. And you get the opportunity. When you go to college, you go to especially a four-year school, right? You have time to develop. You have facilities. You had pretty decent facilities that were almost brand new and really cool opportunities there. Obviously, you are reading Lord of the Rings when you're young. There's some focus on school for sure. So you had earlier talked about how, like, when you were taking that next step, it became kind of it was hard to relax maybe right away and to play as you knew you could, and it was easier to like tense up. And so how did that transition go on that side of things when you stepped into college?
Yeah. So I think obviously the freshman year, you're terrified when you show up and you don't know how you're going to fit in or just like how things go. And so that was definitely there, but you're not the only freshman, which you kind of like bond over that. And I can't say enough about my teammates. I really love the women that I got to play with. And so as we kind of progressed freshman year, started having some games, I was just like, hey, like I'm a freshman. Who cares? Like nobody cares if I do well, right? Like I shouldn't say that, but like it's just like it's the upperclassmen who carry the team, you know, maybe held responsible for the success of the season, the wins and the losses. So I just kind of like went for it and actually like got to play like a decent amount right away. I felt like for what I was expecting. And then kind of as soon as that happened and I started to like have people like, oh, like you're playing, you know, as soon as I started to maybe be like, oh, I'm doing well, I realized it. And then I started to put pressure on myself and then kind of, so then at that level, you start to play any mental games with yourself and you can't compete. I got to play some my freshman year, but kind of slowly just kind of maybe took the role more sitting on the bench.
And that's not easy. Because it probably wasn't how you finished your high school career, right? And
yeah.
On the face side of things, like you've seemed like you were moving in the right direction, at least in the knowledge that you had when you stepped on campus. What did that look like for you on campus with your faith walk?
Yeah. So fortunately, I had a pretty good community just in general. I ended up rooming with one of my childhood best friends, which was really good. Kind of started to get connected with some crew staff. But when basketball started, it's almost like wipes everything out. You're just like, how do I do this? Like, it's like requires so much energy and concentration that in a way, kind of everything got put to the side. And so I was fortunate though. So I lived in the dorms. And then when the first year basketball ended, and I found myself like in this dorm, I started going to a Bible study, actually ended up getting connected with some really cool other Christian women and getting invited to like live in a house with them. And so started to develop this group of friends, kind of connected with crew outside of basketball, which was really helpful just to kind of helped maintain a sort of perspective on what I was doing. And they became my friends for kind of throughout college. And so that was really providential that I was able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like crew staff in particular, right? Like Casey Spark, who was somebody that you watched, mm-hmm, right?
Exactly.
And how cool that connection gets made. Yeah. So you are sort of like the basketball players you saw across the street from you growing up.
Absolutely. Right?
That was part of your walk, was to see that. Yeah. What about like kind of as you go in college, and there's, you know, college sports today is so much different than where we were at the time, but you know, you played through a D1 transition. You probably had 2 years of the D1 transition. Is that right? And you are going through this, the name change was in the middle. There's a whole bunch of stuff there, but there's also this like reality that when you're in high school, it's like, as you grow, like you're probably going to be able to physically maintain over other people that are younger, and at college it's like we need to win. And so I remember, you know, oh, you're my guy at catcher. And then there's three freshman catchers. It's like, what? And so how did that, like, as your time at UND grew, just as, and you said you're really close with your teammates, but there are challenges that happen in college athletics that don't happen in other areas. And so like, as you played out your career, what were maybe some of those times where you felt God stretch you? And some of those times where you really felt like, yeah, this is kind of my sweet spot.
Yeah, good question. There were some injuries as I moved in after my freshman year. You know, you start to figure things out a little bit. You kind of understand how to communicate with your teachers, get homework done, things like that. Workouts are coming, everything. So the anxiety level kind of decreases a little bit. So I actually started my sophomore year, which we were still Division II. So it was my junior that we transitioned to Division I. And so, you know, my sophomore year, I guess, was kind of, it was good. We won a lot of games, but didn't go very well in the tournament. And so we kind of felt like, oh, we kind of failed a little bit, but I felt like, you know, my performance was okay. I was able to kind of like keep up and I guess do what I thought was expected of me. But as we transitioned into Division I, just taking that next step up was no longer as much of a physical battle. You know, Division II, we had Division I caliber players. And so physically, we were probably just better. But as you step into Division I, it just becomes it's a mental game. Everybody is strong. Everybody's fast. And so we weren't winning as many games. And I started to like really just be like, if I work really hard, if I like don't make mistakes, I won't get yelled at, we'll win. And I slowly talked myself into becoming, or like trying to become, a machine, you know, just the fear of a turnover or a missed shot or like anything just like really started to like cause me a lot of anxiety. And so like while I was experiencing this on the basketball court, specifically in games, you know, I mean, you work hard in practice, but once you start playing in games, it's just the game anxiety that kind of can cause all this. And I'm in Bible studies, I'm going to crew, and I'm just like really wrestling with God of like, why can I not just like trust you in this? Like, why is basketball causing me so much anxiety? Why can't I just get this figured out? Like, why is my shot off? Like, why I'm working so hard? And for 2 years would have these on and off, just like, oh, that was a terrible game. I was really tight and like I didn't play. And then maybe the next game something would click and it was like, oh, that was a great game. Like, what did I do? What did I do, God, that I did that? Like, can I repeat that? It was just like kind of like trying to find this almost like formula of like what allows me to rest and relax? What makes me like tense? And I just like, I could never honestly like figure it out. And I felt like such a failure. I felt like I wasn't living up to my potential with like the God-given gifts that he had given me for playing sports. Like I felt like I was feeling people down who are watching, and I just like felt a lot of shame and discouragement kind of through that whole process. And I mean, I played throughout my junior and senior year. I mean, I was on the court, but I always just left with this sense of like, I could have done more. I could have been better. And so like, as my basketball career ended, like final games, senior nights, all of that, it ended. And I just remember praying like, God, like, why didn't you help me to figure this out? Like, why could I never like overcome it? And I just remember him speaking to me like, Lisa, it was like never about you succeeding, you know? And I just realized that I had been living with this just massive fear of failure, like this perfectionism, and that it had been this kind of like this thing that I was holding on to. Like, if I could just do it my way this way, then everything's going to be okay. And I just like, I think through that process and being done and like starting to let go, like God started to like break that kind of the attitude inside of me.
Oh, wow. I just got chills because I think that's such a, first of all, that's an athlete's mindset, right? Is like the performance driven, I can do it if I work harder, if I do this, if I do that. And then when it doesn't produce, I'm a failure. And then to, as a Christian athlete, to like, you were doing all the things. You were in Bible study, you're praying, you're obviously like, this is not just Elise doing it on her own. It's trying to use what God has given her for his purpose. But then to like, feel like it's not about you succeeding, it's about me. And so obviously that's like post-basketball and you're like, oh, if I'd had a COVID year, I'd have figured it out. But I think there's power in that too, right? Like he brought you well beyond where you were comfortable, well into a trial, a pretty serious trial, I would imagine, every day, all the work and years of work to bring you to that point. What does the response become then from you when you learn that? Because that's like a really big faith moment in your life, right? Is like, it is not about you being perfect. It's about the perfection of Jesus. What does that result in then, in your next steps?
Yeah, great question. So I think, you know, God is a good father and like, he like loves it when his children dream and go for things. I think the process that he was bringing me through was that it was good to dream, but he wanted to replace my dreams with his dreams and like my plans, like with his plans. And so after I realized and just felt like such a failure after finishing basketball, I was just kind of like, okay, God, like, well, what do you want with my life then? Like, where am I supposed to go if it's really not about me succeeding? Which, I mean, you say it out loud and it's like fairly obvious, but like when you're living it, it's like, thought that I was doing the right thing. I was working so hard. I was doing all these things I thought you wanted me to do. And so like, where do I go to replace what I was trying to do? And had some friends sort of talk to me about this thing they were doing called the World Race. And the World Race is like a mission trip with an organization called Adventures and Missions. And I heard about it and my reaction was, ha, that's good for you. I'm never doing that. That sounds so scary. Like that was literally my answer. And I went home and I was telling my mom about my day and I told her about this World Race and she just burst out crying. And I'm like, oh, you don't need to cry. I'm not going. And she just somehow knew I was going on this trip. And so I kind of was like explored different things, but this thing kept drawing me. And the World Race is basically a year-long discipleship journey. And you go to 11 countries in 11 months and you serve alongside missionaries and like organizations in 11 different countries. The purpose is community and learning to like serve like God's kingdom. Big picture, right? In the whole world. But that sounded terrifying. It sounded like I could like get malaria. It sounded like, I don't know. It just sounded like a lot of scary things that I wasn't necessarily up for. But God's like slowly drew me. And eventually I was just like, if I'm going to like live my life by faith, like I think this is the step I need to take. I need to leave like what I'm comfortable with. And I need to just go and I need to trust God that he cares about my life, that he cares about what's going on and that I need to believe that because I need to like test it out. I need to actually go. Yeah.
Laying aside your plans, your dreams, like you said, and saying like, God, where do you want to have me? And yeah. So you said yes to the World Race. And
I said yes. Yeah.
And so you don't have to give a bunch of details, but I didn't say yes to that. And that sounds scary to me too. But what did, like maybe if you can, because I know not everybody can share all the things, but if you can't, like, where were some of the places you went?
Yeah, absolutely. So my actual World Race year, we spent in Central America, Eastern Europe, Africa, and Asia. And we worked with some orphanages, taught English. Some churches wanted us to actually go door to door and like share the gospel. And kind of through all of that, we were put in teams of like six or seven. Some were co-ed and some were just like there was a lot of women on the trip. So some were kind of just all girls teams. And like through that year, learned to serve and also like learn to live in community and to help one another, like kind of understand ourselves better and understand God better.
So what was, you know, maybe as you're living open-handed with what God has in your future and in your story, what was maybe something that you saw about living in community on the world race that you didn't get to see in college? Because to be honest, like college is set up to live in community if you want to take it. And it seemed like you were kind of doing that anyway and being really intentional, but there's always opportunity to grow. What was maybe something you saw about living in community that you were like, oh, that's, I've never seen it in that, either I have never seen it or I've never seen it in that way before?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's like two things that really stick out to me. So the squad that I was put on is very interesting. Like a lot of them were very talented musically, artistically, theater. I think there's maybe one other girl who had grown up in athletics. And so I was put with all these people who like had no idea what I had just done in college, like played basketball. They didn't care, honestly. And so it was this opportunity to be with people who like could care less about my sports ability, that I had maybe failed at basketball. And they just like loved me for like who I was, just like being with them. And that was really healing for me. And as a part of that trip, we also would like intentionally sit down with as a team and try to like talk through conflict and kind of point out things of like, hey, I see that you're actually really good at this, but I don't know if you like actually have the confidence to like do that thing, but I think you should do it. Like, and so just like learning to like see other people for who they were in Christ and like the gifts they'd been given and like help people actually work out their salvation and like maturity in Christ of like, yeah, what, like growing in the gifts that like he has given them.
Yeah. And if you're going to, because you spent the whole time with that same group?
We got switched around a little bit, but okay. We were with people for, yeah, pretty long periods of time where you got to know people well. Yeah.
And so I'm sure like that investment of time allows you to see those things, allows you to speak life into those things. And I mean, it's pretty incredible when somebody speaks life into something that you think could be something you enjoy or you think could be something God's calling you to, but you're not quite sure. But when somebody else says it and is like, I see this in you, there's so much power in that.
Yeah, it's life-changing. It really is. I went into like that whole year with like really minimal confidence. Like I just felt like a failure. I didn't want to talk. Like I didn't think that anything I had to say was worth listening to. And just had so many wonderful people just be like, we see this in you. We see God doing this in you. And like you can trust him. And just, yeah, it was life-changing for sure.
Yeah. You get off of the world race and you said you really loved the organization. So you didn't just leave. You didn't just go back to Grand Forks. So, and where'd God have you then?
Yeah. So then I joined them for basically a year and a half internship. And the coolest part of that, well, I moved to Georgia. That was really cool. Never lived anywhere besides North Dakota. And then I got to lead some overseas trips. And so specifically got to lead a college age one. And it was probably where I just realized maybe my own gifting in like learning and like discipling and mentoring other people, just how much like fun it was and like how amazing it was. So yeah, I was overseas, I think for 8 months, like leading different size groups. And I love that these specific people had like left what they were comfortable with and they had trusted God and they were just so open to like learning and growing in so many different ways. And I loved like joining them on that journey.
And how cool that you had just done that, right? You had just,
exactly,
just trusted God. Like, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to just turn over my plans to you. And now you're the one that God has called in that time to do that. That's so cool. Yeah. So I know right now you serve, you're in medicine. How did that come about?
Yeah. So when I got done with that internship, I was like, thought for sure I was going to be a missionary or join this, join Adventures and Missions. I like loved it. But there was like this something inside of me that was just like, not like I have more for you, like those things aren't enough, but like I've designed you differently, right? Like I have more for you to learn and grow in. And I didn't know what that was. So it took me a while to figure out. I came home, And I would just like, it was like that kind of like my response to God is to just like work hard and figure it out. And I just like started to try to like buckle down. And then I felt like I was like, just like relax, just like enjoy life. Like I will like lead you. And kind of as I started to like let go again, I just got led to the PA profession. And something just really clicked of like, I'm interested in medicine. I'd always been interested in medicine to a certain degree, but kind of just like got reignited in a different way. And I started to explore that. And then kind of everything just fell into line to get accepted into PA school and then graduate with a PA degree. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been doing that for a long time. And I know you're a person of intentionality. You're not just putting your faith aside when, you know, anywhere you go. And so like, even though it's not ministry, it is everywhere is a mission field. And so could you speak to that? Like, how do you take some of the things that God taught you all along the way through college and being on mission literally for like, you know, over 2 years, very intentionally, to now this profession that you've been doing for a long time?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So I think one thing that I've really been growing in is coming to really understand like what Paul means when it's like, we do everything, like everything that we do is for the glory of God. And that didn't quite make sense to me. I mean, I get it to a certain degree, but I would actually like go to work sometimes kind of when I first became a PA and, you know, just be overwhelmed with like, if I make a mistake, like what happens to people and kind of like the whole perfection and failure thing like came alive again as I became a PA and started like practicing. And I realized kind of through my studying and everything that if I lived my day trying not to make a mistake, when I got to the day, I was exhausted. It wasn't like a good day because what I was saying success was just like not failing. And God started to show me like, I don't want you to harm people. Like that's not the goal, but I want you to like go into your day, like ready to like create with me and like to not worry about making a mistake so much as like encountering the people that you see, like each patient, like what they're going through, and see every person as an opportunity to like to meet somebody in a hard spot and to be there with them and to like create in that space instead of just like not make a mistake in that space. And so everybody's in a different space when they come in, obviously to the clinic. I see a lot of post-op patients, but I try to just see everybody as like on a journey that I can join. And then when it's appropriate, just like, yeah, do you need prayer for this? Like, cause some people come in like pretty in quite a bit of pain and pretty discouraged sometimes. So.
Yeah. It's so important. Like you are at times seeing people on their worst day.
Absolutely. Right?
And
yes,
sometimes it's a planned worst day, but sometimes it's their absolute worst day and just how God can move through you in that time. Like what a better, that's a perfect place to be, right?
Absolutely.
Is, mm-hmm. is to be serving there. So you also like, so you're in back in Grand Forks and, but you also have this like very ministry mind and you've seen discipleship lived out and you've experienced it and you had all of these, had a lot of growth. What did that look like? What has that looked like now for you with discipleship?
Yeah. So when I came back to Grand Forks, grateful for God's timing, because it was right before COVID. So right when I got back, it was even kind of just a struggle to do like daily life. And I was grateful to be around people that I knew and not starting a new job in like a new place. And as that kind of cleared up, I was just like, okay, God, like, where can I invest? Where can I kind of use the gifts that you've given me? And got connected with Tate. And I shouldn't say I was hesitant to start with FCA again in any bad sense. It was just like, I think I'd spent a lot of time trying to get over having my identity and being an athlete, right? And like, was I ready to enter back into that world? Working with college age athletes who are probably struggling with that same thing that like sports is, you know, to make it to college, like sports has to like be your world to a certain degree. And so was I ready to step back into that? And met with Tate and it, yeah, just kind of clicked from there and have been able to be a part of kind of the women's side of things here in Grand Forks. And I just like, I love the weekly huddle. It's always good, but I love getting to meet with our leaders and just like hear about their lives and join them in their journey.
Yeah, this is so cool. The full circle moment to see what you saw across the street and what you lived and what you led, and then to also be able to lead it again. I think that's super cool. And you're right. Like, this is all of the things that you talked about are prominent. Maybe not every single athlete has gone through all of them, but they are prominent in athletics. And
absolutely.
To be able to, I'm sure it was hard to, like you said, jump back into that world that you had tried to like spent years like taking apart. But what a cool testimony of God's faithfulness in your life to even those really hard and sometimes broken places, to be able to use those to influence specifically the student leaders who are then influencing their entire teams and the university as a whole. So that's super, super cool. What have been maybe some of those, and obviously it doesn't have to get too specific here, but as you've, you know, obviously perfectionism is something that's going to come up. You're going to talk about that. You're going to talk about that struggle. You're going to probably talk about some of the things that you've learned, some of the positives you learned about living in community and how to do that, how to call out what you see that God is doing in somebody's life to encourage them. Anything else that has been a pretty important piece that you have, that you've gone into?
Yeah. I think one thing that I have, when I reflect back on some of the most like powerful times in my life when other people were able to speak into it and to help me to like understand myself and kind of what God was doing, I realized that it was those people who are willing to just like sit and like understand me and like understand like what I was going through, the fears I was going through, the emotions I was going through, and in like that power of just being able to like be with someone to like slow, just for me to like slow myself down so that I'm actually present with the person I'm across from is so powerful. Cause I think God is doing, he's constantly working in us and around us. And I think I've made the mistake in the past of trying to like move ahead of God, or I think I know what God is doing, but then I'm kind of probably wrong. And so when I'm able to just really like slow down and listen and understand another person, I just found that to be really helpful.
That's really good. I think one of the things, just as I've done this and as I've talked to other people and heard their stories, there's a lot of similarities, obviously, for what it looks like, especially if it's led by God, if you're open-handed and not trying to control it, and, you know, or like you said, things that don't work, that you're like, that was me. I was thinking that this is what God wanted. But I also think it's really cool that you have that opportunity to just be slow with somebody and to sit with them. Like that's what you needed at different times. And we all still need that, right? But that you have that ability to do that and to invest in those leaders. That's super awesome.
I've always found it very interesting. Like, you know, God is just saying, I am the God who's with you. Like, I am with you. Like Jesus' response is like, I am with you. I am with you. And obviously we are not God. We don't have that power, but just the fact that you like, you're not like, we're not alone, that we live life, like an observed life is a way to say it, that we are not alone. That just adds, it just adds so much like power and like life to whatever is happening, even if it's really hard, even if the suffering is really hard, just knowing like we're actually not alone, that God is with us and that we have people walking with us is just, it's very powerful, I think.
And so you've been helping out, kind of doing this discipleship now at UND for 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, maybe. I think I've lost some freshmen, so I think maybe 4 or 5.
Okay, wow.
If that makes
four
sense.
Or five. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. I love it. Lost some freshmen.
Yeah.
The freshmen sometimes just get lost too. Yeah. Oh, that's super cool how, and I'm sure that also results in like, you're going to a basketball game, you're going to a volleyball match, you're going to a soccer game or something like that when you're leading people because you're investing in their life.
Absolutely. Yes.
So we all, throughout our life, we all have things that we walk through and walk in. And so for you now, you've been in Grand Forks for a little bit. You've been investing in athletes at UND now for 4 or 5 years. You've lost a few freshmen. What is God walking you through now?
Yeah. I would say, you know, the last couple of years have been really, really challenging in some ways and like really, really wonderful. So I just completed a master's of leadership in theology from Regent College. That's in Vancouver. And I think it was just like perfect timing that I was able to get some like theological and like more leadership training, especially in like a cohort-based learning style, because I'm not married. And that's been something that I've wrestled with, I mean, like fairly significantly, probably as I entered like my later 20s, right? When a lot of my friends have started to be married and starting to have children, or it just seems like everybody was headed that direction. I felt like I feel like I'm on this like path that, you know, I'm like, God, have you forgotten me? Like, I feel like I'm trying to follow you and be obedient, but like what is happening to everybody else also happening to me? Like, and of course, like based on my personality, kind of what I've shared, it's like that perfectionism of like, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing something wrong, and to not receive this good gift from you. And just like, I've known that that's flawed thinking, right? That God is not a genie, that you can't follow this formula to like get what you want. That God wants our hearts. He wants our worship. He wants our lives, and he gives us good things. But most importantly, he gives us himself. And like, I've known that, but it seems like every time it comes up in this new way. And so more recently, I've had to wrestle with, if my life doesn't look like other people's, like, how do I think about that? It was really challenging. I think every different sort of season of life has challenges, and being single, oftentimes you deal with being lonely. And if you're not lonely, you're alone. And so it was really hard, probably getting close to a year ago. And I was on my way. I was on a trip. I was actually going to a fun reunion. And I was listening to this podcast, and this podcast really like shifted my thinking. And I'll just kind of share, the main message was that marriage is really good. And singleness is really good. And people who are married, like their lives, since they're like joined together, can show a picture of the intimacy of the gospel, that love and intimacy is a picture of the good news and the gospel. A single life also shows the gospel. And I never really understood that. And they shared that like a single life actually shows the sufficiency of the gospel. And not like I don't struggle with things, but that my life isn't like propped up against another human life. Like my life actually has to be propped up against like an invisible God who has to come through for me in a different way than maybe my married friends who, I mean, a lot of my friends are women, so who kind of depend on their husband in a good way, in like in a way that they should. And so kind of just this realization that my life also displayed the gospel helped me to understand that like I wasn't less of a human being. I wasn't less of an adult because I wasn't married. Because I think I had this like kind of thinking of like, well, I'm kind of like a fake adult right now. Like I don't have a spouse and kids, so I'm not really an adult. I kind of had this weird thinking about it. And that really started to speak to me that like, no, like your life is just as meaningful. You're just as much of an adult. And truly, like you can keep living your life and enjoying it. In like trusting that God will bring good gifts at the right time.
Wow. That's really, really good. We've been married for a long time since college, but that seems like it makes so much sense to think about it in that way. And, you know, as you go through, when your life as a Christian doesn't look like the people that you hang out with and the people that you spend time around, I think it can get to the point where you ask those questions like, well, why not us? Why not me? And that you came to that realization, that's really powerful. And I'm sure that you've had the chance to share that with people. It seems like something that has really changed your perspective in a really good way. And so I bet that's been a real gift to a lot of people. And hopefully somebody listening to this also is like, oh, I can take that, and that can help me to see that, you know, like you're not less of a believer, right? Because, you know, God doesn't love you less, right? You are a child of his. And wow, that's super, super powerful. And I bet that has come up in your meetings with student athletes. And wow, that's so powerful. Well, thanks so much, Elise. It was so good to have you here today and to hear your story and to hear just how God's been moving in your life. So thank you so much.
It was a wonderful to talk to you today.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it and be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify Him.